All right, Rabosai, good morning. The beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Gimel. And we are starting from Kuf Yud Gimel. We're actually picking up in Meretz Hashem 2, 4, 6, 7 lines down from the top. Last word on the line, Dekule Alma, or Dekule. So our shir this morning is dedicated by Natan and Leah Berry, in memory of Leah's beloved grandfather, Avram Chaim Ben Gidalia. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama will have an Aliyah, the family in Nechama. So we'll say, let's go by there. Dekule Alma, Mihas Mimata Lemata, Mimata Lemata Acher, Besibas Habala Kosov Medaber. So both say, remember again, we're still speaking about the concept, ultimately again, still focusing on the pasuk that we were introduced to, on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, that spoke about the very interesting and unique situation of a woman inheriting, apparently according to the drasha of the pasuk, of a woman inheriting again from two different parents who are from two different shvatim, and ultimately again how to reconcile, meaning what she has to do or not do in order to go ahead and maintain tribal integrity for those two portions. So the Gemara says, but at the end of the day, the lashon of mimata lamata achar, that lashon of from one tribe to another, is referring ultimately again to if she inherits if she inherits property, that her marrying a man from a different shevet will move that property over to his shevet. In other words, the lashon bimata lamata acher refers to the dynamic of her marrying a man from another shevet and transferring the property from her shevet ultimately again to his. So the Gemara says, my mashma, how do you know that the lashon of mimata lemata acher ultimately again means one shevet? How do you know that? How do you know that mimata lemata acher means ultimately hasibas habal, that it's the husband ultimately who's transferring it from her shevet to his shevet? So the Gemara says, my mashma, simin, so actually we delete that word simin, amar rabba bar of shila, amar kra, ish. Because Rabbi said the pasuk says ish, and ish often is the biblical word for husband, and therefore again you see that the pasuk is referring ultimately to the husband. But says the Gemara, tarvayhu ish ksiv bu. But one second, both of the pesukim use the word ish. So the Gemara says, Ella amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok amar kra yidbeku. Rabbi said the pasuk says yidbeku. Yidbeku again is a lashon ultimately of marriage. If you look at the Rashbam says, Rabbi say, in the intermediate wide lines, almost right in the middle, right across somewhere it says, Lukute Rashi. So he says, Yidbeku, Ein lashon davak, ela bein ish leisha. Boshai, the lashon of davak, to cling, is a lashon that is used by marriage. Kedechseva davak beishto. The cheva de mafuresh kolkach dechseva be lashon dvika, vadai besivas habal mari. Suppose say, since Torah ultimately uses the lashon of yidbiku, which is a lashon ultimately again of clinging, therefore again it's clear that the Torah's case that it's discussing is where a woman is marrying a man from another shevet, and the concern that she's going to transfer the property that she inherited to her husband's shevet. Says, you know, one second, tarvayu yidbiku ksiv. But I will say, both psukim that we are quoting over here by Yerusha use that same lashon of yidbiku, of clinging. I will say, now remember, let's be clear on one thing. Here's what we know. There are two psukim, well, we'll see that actually, there are more two psukim, but for our purposes, two psukim that speak about this issue of transferring inherited property from shevet to shevet. So we assume that they're both not talking about the same issue, which is a woman marrying a man from another shevet. Bepashtos, one of them is talking about the husband, and presumably the second one is talking about a son. So we're trying to figure out which pasuk is which. The Gemara is suggesting that the pasuk just quoted must be referring to the husband. Why? Because he's lashon of yidbiku. Here's the problem. So the Gemara says, but tarvayu yidbiku ksiv. Both of these psukim use that lashon of yidbiku. Ela amar rava amar kra yidbiku matos. So we'll say, ultimately, the pasuk says, this pasuk that we're quoting over here, yidbiku matos, that literally the tribes, mata is a tribe, that the tribes will cling together. If you look at the Rashbam, so we'll say the Rashbam is about five lines up from before it gets very wide. Matos, mashma bal, tidvekas matos ayede balhu. So we'll say, again, these two words, or this phrase of yidbiku matos, that the matos ultimately, again, will come together, will come together. So Rabbi will say, this lashon, in what situation can you have a dibuk between the matos? In what situation can you have a clinging between the tribes that only occurs ultimately again through marriage? Ravashi says, Amarkra, mimata lemata acher. So we'll say, ultimately again, the pasuk when speaking about the transfer of tribal property says, from one tribe to another. So it uses lashon of acher. Ben lav acherhu. And it will say, a son is not considered to be ultimately an acher. And it will say, what does that mean? So what Rav Ashi is picking up on over here is something very interesting. That when it says, mimata lemata acher, what that means is that there is a particular relationship that has the ability to transfer tribal property from one tribe to another through an acher. Through an acher. So who is the person who could affect the transfer of tribal property? But yet there's an acher. And we'll say, the way we're understanding acher is someone who is not a blood relative. The only way that happens is how? Through marriage. Through marriage, husband and wife are related, but of course they're not blood relatives. Masha Inkin, again, a son who cannot be deemed an acher. Take a look at the Rashbam, Rav Ashi Amar. Hachi mash makra, this is what the pasuk means to say. Lo sisov nachala mimata ha'ish lamata ish, lamata acher. Shirashena baila im tinose lo shu acher legaba. The husband will say such an interesting idea. The husband is considered to be an acher, an other, legabe his wife. We'll say, now you understand that incredible dialectic, right? I think this is all part of the Ezer Kenegdo idea, all parts, because remember the Torah uses one of the strongest lashonos by marriage, of as we just saw before, the davak b'ishto. So as much as there's a clinging, as much as there's a connection, as much as there's a oneness, nevertheless there's also an acherkeit associated with this, meaning husband and wife, again, obviously are not related in the way, or I should say, with the closeness that other relative relationships have. So the Gemara goes right through. Sorry, Rashman goes right through. He says, "Aval no seves anachalai debino sheyorisha." Eino acher mamish. So therefore, Rabbi said the Gemara suggests, Rav Ashi suggests that the fact that the pasuk uses lashon of acher ultimately again refers, therefore, to the transfer of tribal property through marriage and not through the son. So the Gemara says, "Amr Rabbi Avo, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Amr Rabbi Anai, Amr Rabbi." So the Gemara says, "Umatu ba mishmed Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha." So we'll say again, somebody says it, right? So we've got a lot of different opinions as to who says it, but at the end of the day, some say the name of Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha. Minayin labal shino notel b'raykim osa. So we'll say. So first of all, we stop. So the Gemara kind of comes to a little bit of a soft stop. We're going to pick up with this a little bit more, but again, what we've established is that we have a number of different pesukim that speak about the issue of a woman who inherits property from her father, or for that matter, from her mother. She's a sole inheritor. The issue that comes about through her marriage to someone from a different tribe. So the Torah telling us that there are two ways in which tribal property could be transferred to someone else, either through the marriage of the husband, or ultimately again through her son. So the Torah seems to be telling us that Lamaisa, we try to encourage this woman to marry within her tribe in order to go ahead and maintain tribal integrity. Again, whether that is actually halacha, meaning we'll see the halacha Lamaisa ramifications of that. So we'll say the Gemara just goes on to a tangent for just a little bit. Minayin lebal shenonot al barakim osa. What I said, and this is actually a very interesting discussion. So what we've also established is that a husband inherits his wife. Right, that's what we've established again, that a husband is a first position inheritor, legabe his wife. So says the Gemara the following. So how do I know that a husband only takes roi, or I should say, only takes roi and not mochsok? Now what do these terms mean? Well, say, take a look at the Rashbam. First wide line, beroi. See the first wide line, beroi. Kigon, shemese ishto, v'acharkach mesavio. Dinachalo zuru uyalo ilo haisa kayemes. Minayin shlo yirash elekrovea mitzadaav. Open a yirashena. Shaben yoresh es zikino kibisis. So we'll say, listen to this. There are two, let me tell this outside, then we'll do it inside. So we'll say, when it comes to Yerusha, there are two different categories of property. There is what's called, let's go different order, mukhsak. Mukhsak means what we're saying. It's what you own at the time that you die. So whatever I own at the time that I leave this world, that's called mukhsak. Property that I own. Ra'ui, Rav Osei, means property that is coming to me. Right? I don't own it at the time of death, but technically it is coming to me. So Rav Osei, so what do I mean by that? So for example, the following. Let's analyze this for just a moment. We'll call Reuven is the son of Yaakov, and Reuven has his own son, Chanoch. We'll just borrow the Rashbam's example from a few days ago. So what happens? Reuven dies. Actually, yeah, Reuven dies. This is just for illustration purposes. Reuven dies. So whatever property Reuven owns at the time of his death, that's called Muchsak. There's Ra'ui. What's the Ra'ui property, Rabbi Hussein? Reuven predeceases his father. Reuven has a father, Yaakov. So Reuven, let's assume Reuven is an only son. So that Yerusha that Reuven stands to inherit from Yaakov, that's called the Ra'ui. He is entitled to that. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following. When we say that a husband inherits his wife, Rabbi Hussein, that is only the property that she owns at the time of death. Anything that she stands to inherit in the future does not go to the husband, but rather, again, goes to other closer relatives. So, for example, in this case over here, let's say, again, Reuven is married. It's called Yaakov is married to Rachel. Yaakov is married to Rachel. And so Rachel dies. Now, Rachel happens to have a father. We'll call him Lavan. Rachel has a father, Lavan. So what happens? When Rachel dies, anything she owns at the time of her death goes to Yaakov. But now let's say again, Rachel predeceases her father. They also happen to have a son. We'll call him Yosef. So what happens? When Rachel dies, Yaakov inherits her. Let's say then 5 years later, again, Lavan dies. Who gets that Yerusha, Rabbi Osai? So Yosef gets that Yerusha. Rachel, deceased Rachel's son, gets that Yerusha from the grandfather. That does not go to Yaakov. That's what it means when it says that when a husband inherits his wife, he only gets the Muchsak and not the Ra'i. If you take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment, he says three lines down in the Rashbam, Kim Muchsak, Yerusha, Shei Muchzekes Kvar Kodem Misasa. See, he only gets the property that she owns at the time of her death. Kigon, Shemei Savia, V'acharkach Meisa. So for example, let's say her father predeceased her, she inherited her father. So again, fine, so let's go back to the Gemara over here. So says the Gemara, excuse me. Okay, so minayin lebal sheino notel b'raikim muchsak. So how do I know that a husband doesn't take the ro'i like he takes the muchsak? In other words, he only takes the property that she owns at the time of death, and he does not entitle to any future inheritance. Shneamar. But this is very interesting. We're going back to the psukim that we quoted on Shabbos. We learned it twice. We learned it Shabbos and Sunday. Shneamar usiguf holit as yoyer vahilo eshem v'shalosh arim be'eretz hagilad. Because we'll say the pasuk says that skuf gave birth to Yair, and Yair had 23 cities in the land of Gilad. So the Gemara says, Minayin the Yair, Shelo Hayalo B'Skuf. So I'll say, how could it be that Yair the son had property that his father Skuf did not know? So we assume that the normal way in which children had property was how? They inherited it from their father. So how did Yair have 23 cities that did not belong to Skuf, his father? So the Gemara says, Ella, good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Just because you stay back there, I'm not going to write, I still see you. Says the Gemara the following, Ella, melamed, shenasa sguv isha, umesa v'chaye morisha. Rather, Rabbi Osei, what do you have to say? You have to say that at the end of the day, sguv married a woman, right? Skuv, the son, married a woman. And what happens? She died, umesa v'chaye morisha. She died during the lifetime of those who inherit her, umesu morishah biyarsha yair. And also, we'll say, so let's go through this relationship again. So where did Yair have property that did not belong to Skuf, his father? Rather, what happened? Ela melameit shenasa Skuf isha. So ultimately, again, Skuf married a woman. Skuf got married. Umesa bechaye morishah. And I will say, ultimately, again, she died. She died, meaning she predeceased. She predeceased those who inherit her. Umesa morishah v'yarsha yair. So we'll say, ultimately, again, what happens? So she went ahead, I should say, her father died, right? His wife's father died. She inherited the father, her father. She then died, and ultimately, yair inherits her. which is along the same Rabbi say ultimately that Ya'ir's wife inherited her father, Ya'ir's wife died, he inherited her, and that's where he got all of his property from. Rabbi say obviously that's property that has nothing to do with his father, and that's why again these 23 cities are listed under his inheritance, nothing to do with his father. So the Gemara says Va'omer. Va'omer. Furthermore, Pasuk says, Ve'elazar ben Aaron meis, Vayikburu oso. So we'll say the Pasuk says that Elazar ben Aaron died, and they buried him Begivas Pinchas Beno, on the hilltop of Pinchas his son. So same Shiloh. Minayim Pinchas Shelo Hayelo Le'elazar. So where did Pinchas have property that did not belong to his father? So the Gemara says, Malame Shinasa Elazar Isha. We learned that Elazar married a woman. Umesa bechaye morisha. We'll say umesu morisha v'yarsha Pinchas. So we'll say same yisod. Ultimately, what's happening over here? Pinchas's wife, her father, someone dies. She inherits. Then she dies, and he inherits. We'll say all the Gemara is doing is bringing these pesukim as a raya for what? As a raya for the fact that a husband only inherits his wife regarding those things that she owns at the time of her death. The reason why all of these women had so much property is because apparently they were the sole inheritors of their family. Their fathers predeceased them, then these women predeceased their husbands, and ultimately the husbands acquire or inherit all of this property. So the Gemara says, "My Vomer, why is there a need to go ahead and quote both of these?" Why do you need the second pasuk? My Vomer, v'chi tema ya'ir dahava nasiv esesa. Umesa v'yarsa. So maybe you'll just say that at the end of the day, Ya'ir was married to a woman and she died and he inherited her. Talmud Lomar ve'Elazar ben Aaron meis. Therefore, we'll say the pasuk brings down the case of Elazar ben Aaron. I should say the case of Pinchas. V'chitema d'nafla le'bisad d'charamim. But maybe the way we said this yesterday, maybe the way Pinchas ultimately acquired this property was Harabosai as a result of a cherim, meaning maybe, remember again, we spoke about this yesterday, the cherim vow, that if somebody goes ahead and pledges their field, ultimately again, makes a cherim neder, that vow, that property becomes the property of the coin. So maybe that's how Pinchas acquired his property. Amakra, Bino Nachala. So we'll say, Bino Nachala Haru'uyolo V'yarsha Bino. So we'll say, ultimately, again, the Pasuk brings down the Lashon of Bino, and therefore, again, the Pasuk understands that we're talking about a din in inheritance and not a din in Chayra. Fine. So we'll say, so again, and that indeed is Halacha L'maisa. The way we Paskin Rabosei is that when a husband inherits his wife, he only inherits in what's called that which is Mukhzok, and not that which is roi. So a husband only inherits his wife regarding that property that she owns now at the time of death. But let's say, again, she was a sole, so to play this out, let's say a woman is a sole inheritor of her parents, but she predeceases her parents. So then what happens? When she dies, husband inherits her anything she owns. Let's say 5 years later, her father dies. And again, technically speaking, the deceased daughter was the sole inheritor. So we'll say, who inherits? The closest surviving relative, meaning, but not the husband. So, for example, if Rachel left behind the son, so remember, again, we'll say a father inherits before a son, meaning when a woman dies, her husband inherits her before her son does. But let's say, again, if then the woman were to die and leave behind the son, when her father were to die, her son would be a first position inheritor. Should there be no son, it would be some other close male relative to the deceased father, but the husband of the deceased daughter has absolutely no inheritance rights to the deceased father's estate. Good. Says the Gemara, B'nei Achos. So let's remember again, remember, this was another interesting case in the Mishnah. This is actually talking about that the sons of sisters have the ability to inherit each other. So we'll say, essentially what this is talking about over here is the ability of nephews to inherit their uncle. That's pretty much what it's talking about. That if a man were to die, let's say again, Reuven has three sisters, and no other relatives. So if you were to go ahead and die and a sister were to inherit him, so then the sister were to have a son. So technically speaking, when the sister dies, ultimately the property goes to the son. So you could have a situation where, again, a little bit circuitous, but a nephew ends up inheriting his uncle. Says the Gemara, Tana b'nei achos v'lo b'nos achos. So the Gemara says, we learned, this is talking about, again, nephews and not nieces. Nephews and not nieces. So, if you look at the last Rashbam, he says, u'b'nei achos yorshin achi iman, sons or nephews have the ability to technically inherit their uncle. V'lo b'nos achos, but not nieces. So we'll say amud beis, kufi gimel amud beis. L'may hilchasa. So asks the Gemara, what exactly does that mean? So amud Rav Sheshes. So we'll say, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. L'may hilchasa. V'mayit lehu. So we'll say, when we say that nieces don't inherit, what exactly are we coming to say? So the Gemara says, v'adai. The Gemara says, v'mayit lehu. Havadai yorshos ache iman. Shahari habas yoreshes ima. Ubimakum ima omedes yoresh ache ima. Shahari isha yoreshes es acheha. Bimakum shein ach kidla kaman besan. So we'll say, it can't literally mean that nieces can't inherit. Because we'll say, let's set up the construct. Let's say, again, a woman has a brother. Or I should say, a man. We'll call him Reuven. Reuven has a sister. Reuven dies, no heirs. No heirs, no close relatives. So I said, let's say the closest surviving relative is his sister. So sister inherits. Now the sister dies. Who inherits the sister, Rabbi Osei? Who inherits the sister? Now remember, we spoke about the inheritance of a mother on Shabbos. What did we learn about the inheritance of the mother? Who shares in it? Everyone shares in it, right? Sons and daughters share in the inheritance of the mother. We saw, again, sons still take precedence in that inheritance, like the inheritance of the father. There's no pishnayim, but daughters get to share in that particular inheritance as well. So the Gemara is like this. So mother dies, so if she leaves behind sons, of course, again, sons inherit. And on a technical level, the sons are inheriting the property of their deceased uncle, right? By way of their mother. So now, I have a brisa that says that it's not for the nephews and not the nieces. So the Gemara says, bless you. The Gemara says, what does that mean? Meaning, that can't be literal that it's not the nieces, because that's not true. Meaning, nieces could inherit as well. If that mother dies, that mother who inherited from her deceased brother, now let's say all she has is daughters. When she dies, who gets her property? Her daughters. So therefore, again, what's that a case of? The nieces inheriting the uncle's property as well. So that's what Rashbam says over here. You can't say that it means that the nieces can't inherit, because that's not true. Just finish that Rashbam, tap Rashbam. He says, Umakom ima ima omedes, liyay shachim ishara isha yoreshes es acheha b'makom shein ach. A woman inherits her brother in a place where there are no other brothers. So we'll say, so therefore the Gemara says, L'may hilchasa. So when you say this halacha only applies to nephews and not to nieces, what exactly are you saying? Amar Rav Sheshes l'kadein. To which Rav Sheshes says, you're right. We're not saying it doesn't apply to nieces. What we're saying is that the nephews have precedence over the nieces. When we say nephews and nieces, understand, we're talking about the identity of the inheritors vis-a-vis what? Vis-a-vis the original owner of the property. These children are actually inheriting the property, of course, from their deceased mother. But this origin of this property was ultimately, again, with the deceased mother's brother, i.e. the inheritor's uncle. So let's say, take a look at the Rashbam, so l'kadim, what does that mean? Sheikadmu habanim labanos, liyoresh es dodeyen. So let's say, what we're learning over here is that what? When the mother dies, and the property that's being passed down to her children is property that originated with her deceased brother. So it's really the Yerusha, ultimately, again, of these inheritor's uncle, that sons take precedence over daughters. That although, again, everyone stands to inherit, it is ultimately, again, sons have kedimus in the inheritance over the daughters. So the nephews have kedimus, have priority over the nieces. Tani Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok kamed Rafuna. So it's Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok sebe for Rafuna. V'yarash. Remember, again, the pasuk is talking about over here the following. This is v'im ein achim la'aviv unesate v'snach alaso l'sheiro hakara ve'lam mishpachto v'yorash osa. So we'll say, so the pasuk says v'yorash will inherit makish yerusha shnia v'yerusha rishona. The pasuk says, this is very interesting. The Torah is equating what we call second yerusha with first yerusha. They're both saying, now what does that mean? What's first Yerusha, second Yerusha? What it really means is it's equating paradigmatic Yerusha, or I should say it is equating what we'll call non-paradigmatic Yerusha with paradigmatic Yerusha. People say, what's paradigmatic Yerusha? What's the paradigm of Yerusha? Right? Children. Right? Sons. Right? Parent dies. Yerusha goes to the sons. Or Yerusha goes to the children. We'll say to the children. So we'll say, but again, what's the priority again when it goes to children, which is what? Sons before daughters. That is the paradigm. That's the Yerusha paradigm. Parent dies, goes to the children. Sons take precedence over daughters. So both say that's called Yerusha Rishona. Yerusha Shnia is what we'll call non-paradigmatic Yerusha, which both say is every other case of inheritance. So just like in what we call Yerusha Rishona, sons come before daughters. So the Gemara says over here, let's read it. Makish Yerusha Shnia Rishona, excuse me. Makish Yerusha Shnia, the Yerusha Rishona. We are comparing ultimately again about say what we call non-paradigmatic Yerusha to paradigmatic Yerusha. Ma Yerusha Rishona ben kodim lebas. So we'll say, just like in Yerusha Rishona, which is just the regular case of Yerusha, where a parent dies and there are sons and daughters, sons take priority. Af Yerusha Shnia, it will say, so too again. Now again, for our purposes, what's this case of Yerusha Shnia? This is this case, I will say, ultimately again, where the property is really originating with the uncle. And therefore the children are really inheriting their deceased uncle's property. So Lamaisa, even in that case, Ben called them Labas. That a son ultimately again comes before the daughter. Well, say, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Makish, it's almost right across the Rashbam on the left side, about five lines down. Makish, v'chsev, v'im ein lo bas, v'im ein lo achim, v'chein kulam bevav, mosef al inyan rishon. So we'll say, the way that the Torah sets up the section of Yerusha is that each of these particular pieces is building on one another. So the Torah begins, of course, with what we'll call the typical Yerusha situation, which is a parent dying and ultimately, again, the children inheriting. And each other case is added on with a vav. We'll say, so that vav is what we call the vav hamosif, right? It's adding on to the previous situation. So the way the Gemara is understanding that vav is that essentially the paradigmatic case of Yerusha, which is where the parent dies, children inherit, that sets up the paradigm for Yerusha. For our purposes, this paradigm is that sons inherit before daughters. The Gemara is now suggesting that paradigm trickles down to every other variation of Yerusha as well. Tani Rabba Bar Chanina, Kamid Rav Nachman. So Rabba Bar Chanina taught before Rav Nachman. Vahayo biyom hanchilo esbanov. So we'll say now a new topic in Yerusha. What's the new topic? The pasuk says, and it will be on the day that a man will bequeath inheritance to his son. So we'll say this is talking about a different halacha. This is Vahayo biyom hanchilo esbanov is asheri yelo. Lo yuchal levakir as ben ahuva ben asnua b'bechor. So I said the halacha is Torah is teaching us that the bechor receives pishnayim, the bechor receives a double portion, and that's true even if what, even if you like one of the other kids better. So even if you like someone other than your bechor better, nevertheless the bechor ultimately gets pishnayim. The bechor gets a double portion. Okay, so we'll say fine. So Torah is saying the following. So vayabi machilos banav bayom atamapil machalos. So remember again. This is Rabba Bar Chanina saying the Torah before Rav Nachman. So Rabba Bar Chanina says, what do you see from the pasuk? The pasuk says that you can only go ahead that be mapil nachalos. And we'll say mapil nachalos literally sounds like you can only go ahead and give out inheritance by day, but not by night. Not by night. Where does Rabba Bar Chanina get this from? Where does he get it from? Bayom, because the pasuk says by day, bayom anchilo. So therefore, you can only go ahead and literally give out inheritance. Mapil nachlos, so we'll say, yeah, divide up inheritance, give out inheritance, a lot inheritance by day and not by night. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Omar Abaye, Ela Me'ata. So you're telling me, Dishachiv biyamama hu drc? Are you telling me that again? It is only what? It is only someone who dies by day, that his children inherit him, but yet, excuse me, somebody dies by day, that his children inherit him, but if somebody dies at night, his children don't inherit him? What does that mean? That there's only inheritance by day and not by night? So the Shulchan Aruch says, no. Dilma din nachalos kamos. Maybe what we're saying is the following, that the halachos of nachalos, or essentially, the halachos, not the halachos, but the legal proceedings regarding dividing up estates could only be done by day and not by night. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. I will say it's in not the widest lines, but in the intermediate lines, about four lines in. Dilma din nachalos kamrit, shein donin osan ela bayom, kishai dinei mamunis. I will say maybe what it means is the following, that you can only go ahead and adjudicate. You can only go ahead and convene a Beis Din to take care of inheritance law by day and not by night. Why not, Jabosai? Because again, the allotment of inheritance is no different than any other court proceeding, than any other Din Torah, that could only occur by day and not by night. So the Gemara says, this sign, because we learned, what this is saying is the following. Could a person inherit by day? Of course they can inherit by day. In other words, when a parent dies, the child inherits. What it's saying is that if there is the need for Beis Din to step in and to go ahead and help with property allocation or inheritance allocation, that could only be done by day and not by night. So the Gemara says the following. This sign, because we learn, V'haysalav Ne'Yisrael L'chukas Mishpat. Suppose, because the pasuk says, and it will be for Klal Yisrael, l'chukas mishpat. So we'll say, what does this mean, l'chukas mishpat? Ora kol ha-parsha kula lihios din. So we'll say, what the parsha is teaching me is that the halachos of inheritance, or I should say the dealing of inheritance, ultimately is like what? Is like any other din. Is like any other ma'isa beis din. All right, enough to stand. It's like any other ma'isa beis din. We'll say, take a look at the Rashbam, last of the intermediate lines, Ora, he says over here, Lashon Ma'ura V'Lashon Kamikra, Kilomar, Nistaima Lihios Din V'Tzarech Gimel. So we'll say, the Gemara is ultimately understanding over here that what? That Lamaisa, the taking care ultimately of Nachla, of inheritance, is no different than any other Ma'isa Beis Din, which could only be done by Din. I will say, I want to be clear on something. You don't need to go to Beis Din to go ahead and take care of Nachla, to take care of inheritance. Beis Din only comes in either in one of two scenarios. So either there's what? A, right, Machlokis, or B, just a lack of understanding, a lack of clarity, meaning sometimes the intentions of the deceased were not clear. Sometimes there are ambiguous instructions. I mean, again, if you have a situation where a person passes away, and at the end of the day, the children all get along, in Emir Tzashem, Halavai, everything is clear, then of course you don't need a Beis Din to go ahead and divide up inheritance. But where Beis Din is going to take an active role, the Gemara is suggesting that can only be done by day. Why? That's not a unique law in inheritance. I will say, that's true. Beis Din only sits in session by day and not at night. Therefore, again, inheritance is no exception to this rule. So we'll say, the Gemara gives an interesting example of this. The Amar Rav Yehuda, Ukid Rav Yehuda, and this is as Rav Yehuda said, Dam Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda said, Shlosha Shenichmasu Levakir HaSachola. We'll say, listen to this. Three people go in to do Bikur Cholim. They go into the Bima Vakir Cholim. And what happens? So we'll say, if you look at the Rashbam, this is the second wide of the widest lines of the Rashbam. Gimel Shenich Nesulavakir HaSachola, Ratzu Kosim, before we get to that, Nira Be'inai, Tidavka Nakat, Shenich Nesulavakir, Hilchach Ratzu Yaidu, Ratzu Yudayonim. So we'll say, listen to this. They're coming in to go out and do Bikur Cholim. While they are there, what happens? So the Choleh feels that he's going to die. So he gives them instructions, or he tells them what he wants done with his estate. So they go in for Bikur Cholim, and he ends up telling them what it is that he wants to do ultimately with his inheritance. So what happens, Abosai? So what do they do with these instructions? So Yehuda says they have a choice. Ratzu Kosvin, Abosai, if they want, they could go ahead and write down the instructions. Now, what does that practically mean if they write down the Mishnah? Look at the Rashbam. We'll say this is all the way down. This is about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. About 13 lines are from the bottom of the Rashbam. Rotsu kosvin es sa'igus kimosha shon biachola heich manchil mechazim. So we'll say if they want, what they could do is they could commit the instructions to writing and what? And sign on the bottom of that document. Effectively functioning as witnesses. Eidim. So if they want, they could function as witnesses. Or Ratzu Osindin. Or Rabbi will say, if they want, they could function as a Beisdin. They can make themselves into a Beisdin and ultimately, again, allocate the property to the heirs right then and there. Look at the Rashbam. Ratzu Osindin. Tashlosha Ninhu. Because there are three people. So we'll say, so assuming this is a simple division of property, they can act as the Beis Din and divide up their property right there. So again, I will say, it's a fascinating case. Three people going in to do Bikur Cholin. It turns out that what do they end up hearing? The last will and testament of this individual. What do they do with this information? It's their choice. They can either go ahead and draft the information into a document, sign on the document, essentially become Eidim on the last will and testament, or they could become a Beis Din and effectively go ahead and divide up the estate. Now the Rashbam says this is all assuming that this is a simple division. Simple division of Osai means that you have multiple parcels, all of equal value, and there's nothing exceptionally complicated over here. But that is their choice to make. However, Shnayim, let's say again, it's only two people who are going to do Bikur Cholim, not three. What happens under those circumstances? Kosin ve'ein osin. So obviously if it's two people, they can't form a Beis Din. So therefore the only option they have at their disposal is what? They could draft the information into a document, sign on the document, and become Eidim on the last will and testament. Here we go. Rav Chisda said, Lo shanu ela bayom. And we'll say, when do they have the opportunity? If there are three people going in. When do we say they have the choice to be Eidim or to be a Beis Din? That's only what? If they're doing the Bikur Cholim by day. Aval, Bosei Tap of Kofi Yudalad. Aval Belayla. But I will say, if they're doing the Bikur Cholim at night, even if what? Afilu Shlosha. Even if it's three people. Kosvin Ve'ein Osin Din. Then I will say, in that case, again, they could only draft the document, sign on it, but they cannot become a Beis Din. Now the Gemara says, my time. Now why is that? Now before we give the Gemara's answer, for our purposes, why is that? Why is that? Why can't they become a Beis Din? Because it's at night. Because also remember again, what we just did before is we said by Nachla, by inheritance, the Torah says, Vaisa libnei Yisrael luchukas mishpat. The Torah calls, Nachla, the Torah calls the laws of inheritance, chukas mishpat, which means that the laws of inheritance are governed by, like any other matter of legality, which can only be adjudicated by Beis Din by day. So if these three are ultimately going ahead and going into Beis, going to be Mvakar Chola. If they're going by day and they're three, they have the right to choose whether they want to be a Beis Din or they want to be Eidim. But if they're going at night, Rabbi Osai, there is no option to be a Beis Din. So what can they do? They could be Eidim. Rabbi Osai, the Gemara's unasked question is, so why can't we do the following? Let them go in at night, they're doing Bikur Cholim at night, let them draft the document at night, sign on it, and then what? The next morning, become a Beis Din. So the Gemara says you can't do that. Do you know why? My taima. And we'll say, ultimately, again, an aid, a witness, cannot become a dayan. And we'll say, now we'll discuss why that is tomorrow. There's a beautiful Rashbam here, which we'll discuss. But Lamai said they can't become a dayan. So the Imam said, let's just finish this up to 2,000. We'll stop here for today. So remember again, remember how this whole thing got started? Do you remember? How did it get started? So remember, Rabbah Bar Chanina said before Rav Nachman that inheritance can only take place by day and not by night. So to which Rav Nachman said, what are you talking about? So it was like, Rav Nachman himself suggested this whole discussion. And Rav Nachman says, Rabbah Chanina, Rabbah, tell me. Amar Sulimar says, Rabbah Chanina, is this what you meant? When you said that Nachla can only take place by day, were you ultimately referring to this case where if three people go to be Mavakir Cholib by day, they have the choice to be witnesses or Beis Din, but if they go by night, they can only be witnesses and not a Beis Din? Is this Rabbah Bar Chanina what you meant? To which Rabbah Chanina says, Amar Le'ein, Inachinami Kamina. Yeah, This is exactly what I meant. So we'll say, so bottom line again, we reconcile that conversation. We will pick up Emiras Hashem tomorrow with the understanding of Eid, Ein Eid Na'as Sadayon, and Emiras Hashem will go forward from there.